Stanley here, your Renta Yenta. And on today's episode of What Goes On Around Here, I've got the lovely Rita, as in Rita Wilson. Sound familiar? Yep, actress, producer, singer, mom, and oh, wife of actor Tom Hanks. That's right, she's here on our little podcast to talk about her new album, her fourth, I might add, called Halfway to Home, and so much more. So I don't know if a lot of people know, we're speaking with Rita Wilson, the lovely Rita, that you're born right here in Los Angeles, and your name was Margarita, and how do you pronounce the last name?
Ibrahimov.
Oh, Lord. Good
luck. I know. It sounds like a Russian gymnast or something.
How do you say it again?
Ibrahimov.
Ibrahimov.
Right.
Is that? Okay, that's because your mom is Greek and your dad Bulgarian.
Right.
Here's something very interesting that I do want to know the answer to. When your dad married your mom, he changed his name to Alan Wilson, and I read somewhere it was after a street name.
Correct. Yes, because when my dad naturalized and became a citizen, he had been experiencing years and years of being in America and people asking him, how do you say your last name? How do you spell your last name? And I think he just figured, look, if I go with the name Wilson, no one is going to ask me how to spell it. No one is going to question it. So he went with Alan Wilson.
What street? Was it in L.A.?
In L.A., but I thought funny was like, thank goodness he didn't choose like Cahuenga or Sepulveda or something.
Oh my God, she'd be Rita Cahuenga.
Chautauqua.
Well, he wouldn't have chosen those. You know why?
No.
Too hard to spell.
Too hard to spell.
Too hard
exactly.
to spell, which was the reason he originally
could have been
changed
Jones
it.
Or something, you know?
All right. So growing up here in Hollywood, did it make it easier for you to go into the biz?
No, not necessarily, because my parents weren't in the business. My dad was a bartender. My mom was a housewife. But I went to Hollywood High School, which was the public school.
Hello-zy, and where a lot of famous people came from.
A lot of famous people came from there. And I happened to get, if you want to call it that old school way, discovered on my first day of high school by a very famous photographer, Albert Watson, who was with the Harper's Bazaar team. And they were looking for real people to put in the issue that was celebrating women getting the vote in 1972. So they saw me and scouted me, took some pictures, came back the next day, took more pictures. And about 2 weeks later, I went in to have an official meeting with the Harper's Bazaar people. And I got a job that was an editorial layout for bathing suits in Harper's Bazaar.
So wait a second. They didn't take photographs of you in your bathing suit?
No.
You just were the editor? But you did some modeling, didn't you?
Yes, I did. That's how I started my modeling career, from that
editing
job. No.
Editorial?
Editorial means it's a fashion layout in a magazine as opposed to an advertisement.
Oh, okay. That's
right.
Sort of an editorial.
Yes,
not
yes.
Being in the editorial department of editing.
No, no.
Okay.
So I did a fashion editorial layout where I was modeling bathing suits, and it was supposed to be a California vibe and a California scene. And from that, I got my first agent, who was Nina Blanchard, and she was like the Eileen Ford of the West Coast.
What did your mom and dad have to say, seeing as they were not in the business? Were they concerned that you were?
My parents were so extraordinary. My mom took me on all the auditions because I was 14. And so she was with me all the way in through 17, I think. And she would drive me and she was there with me at all times. And my parents trusted us. We were really good kids. And I never wanted to disappoint my parents because I saw how hardworking they were and how good they were. And I didn't ever want to do anything to hurt them. So I was just a stupidly good kid.
How many in the family?
My older sister, younger brother.
Oh, so there's three of you.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you close with them?
Yeah.
And do they live here too?
They all live here.
Everybody stayed
yeah.
in LA. How fabulous.
Yeah.
Okay. So I read somewhere that you said walking on Hollywood Boulevard as a kid, you were enthralled by all the stars on the ground. Did you ever think that one day your name would be on one of those?
Never in a million years.
Anthony, do you know that she just got a star on the Walk of Fame?
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Great.
No, because look, Hollywood Boulevard, growing up in Hollywood, you know, we would go down to Hollywood Boulevard to do whatever your daily errands are. You go to the department store. You go. My mom would get her hair done at the beauty school, Marnello and Comer. We got our school shoes there. I would get my bike.
Marnello, I remember.
Do you remember? Yes.
Wasn't that See? A beauty school?
It was a beauty school because it was cheap. That's why my mom went there. And I would go with her and play with all the heads. You know, they would have the heads with wigs on them and teaching people how to do hair. And so it was just a normal street. But, you know, when I got the star, it was so humbling. But also in the same way, I felt like, wow, when you take all the people who have names on Hollywood Boulevard, they have somehow contributed to the arts, whether through movies, music, writing, whatever it is, their creative output. And that is a very beautiful way to sort of
be honored.
Be honored and understand that without all of those artists, we wouldn't have a history of film and music the way that we have.
And speaking of music, you got honored with your star on the same day that your fourth album, Halfway to Home, debuted. How cool was that? Planned?
No.
Just accident?
Good fortune and good luck. And it was very exciting. And it was, you know.
I mean, I can't imagine. I don't have a star on the Walk of Fame. But I would like one if you're listening, Hollywood. But no, honestly, I think it's the most exciting thing in the world. You are immortalized now forever.
It's crazy. It's really, I really feel mostly that if my parents were alive, that would be the thing that would be something I know that they would really love. I
mean, but your brothers and sister were there, yes?
Oh, yes. They were both there.
So you're being adored by the family even from afar.
Yeah, sure. You know, but I think because my dad was Bulgarian, they were immigrants and they came to America that way, I felt like the dream for them was already accomplished when they came and were able to live in a free country and they didn't have to live through communism or oppression of any kind.
And they did see your
Oh yes.
They did see you, right?
I mean, they saw all of it. They met presidents. We spent the night in the White House,
okay,
you know.
So they get to enjoy you becoming a celebrity, basically.
They really did.
They got to see everything.
They did.
Okay, so that's really great. Okay, now I have to ask you something. I heard a story. Is it true you used to stalk the monkeys? And I don't mean the kind in the zoo. I mean, hey, with the monkeys.
Yes, because if you remember the Monkey Mobile and the Batmobile.
Right.
So the Monkey Mobile was made at this place called Dean Jeffries. And Dean Jeffries was right at kind of on Coanga Boulevard West. So we would go down there hoping that we would see the monkeys. And one day I went down there and Mike Nesmith was there and I could not believe it. So
Is it his mom who invented whiteout?
Yes.
Pelosi.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
I mean, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. So I ran all the way home. I told my sister, Mike Nesmith is down at Dean Jeffries with the Monkey Mobile. Quick, I got to get his autograph. Give me his picture because we collected all the pictures.
This is too good.
So she says, great, make sure he signs it to Lily. And I was like, okay. So I run all the way down there. And as I'm running down there and I'm out of breath, I'm like, wait a minute, I'm doing all the work here. No. So I get down there and I think, no, she's going to get mad at me if I don't say to Lily. So he signs it to Lily, Mike Nesmith. And on the way, when I got home, I corrected
it. You mean you didn't ask for a second one?
No, I only had one picture, but I corrected Lily to make it look like it said to Rita, because I was like, no, damn it, this is to me. If you want your autograph, you run down and back.
Do you still have that?
I do, yes.
Is that amazing?
I have scrapbooks.
Did you ever get to like meet him afterward once you became?
Never. No.
What?
No, I never did. Mickey, I got to meet. I never met Davey. I got his autograph, so I must have met him somewhere, but I don't. Or maybe somebody got me the autograph. But Mickey, actually, when I did a concert at the Disney Concert Hall, which was called Rita Wilson and Friends, Mickey came in and sang with me and sang a couple of his songs, too, which was very fun.
Did you tell him that you were a stalker of the monkeys?
Oh, yeah, he knew. Oh, he knew, yes.
All right, so when did you know was act? I know you started with your modeling, but when did you know I want out of these pages in print and I want on the big screen? At what point and what was your first paid acting gig?
My first paid acting gig was not something that I was trying to do, but it was the Brady Bunch. And I was a cheerleader in at Hollywood High School, varsity cheerleader.
The one where Marsha was trying out for cheerleading.
Yes, exactly.
That
it was called
you?
Greg's Triangle is the episode. Yes.
Oh, my God.
Very,
yes.
Very, you know, important.
Oh, my God.
But it got me my Screen Actors Guild card. And what was so cool was it shot at Paramount. And, you know, it's kind of crazy when you're doing a show that you're like a kid and you're a fan of.
How old were you?
15 and a half, 15, because I didn't drive. My mom had to drive me. And Marsha, Maureen McCormick, would drive to the set every day in a chocolate brown Mercedes. But she was my age, too, so she just had a permit. So I'm not sure how she was doing it.
Illegally.
But maybe her parents were like, yeah, whatever, go to school. Or maybe her mom was in the backseat. I don't know. But a gentleman by the name of Dick Michaels, Richard Michaels, was directing the episode, and he also was dating Elizabeth Montgomery, and she came by the set.
Okay, and then you went on and you did Bosom Buddies. Was that your next one?
No, so after the Brady Bunch, then
I got my... Because you did a lot of sitcom stuff,
yes,
right? Yes,
I got my Screen Actors Guild card, and really the thing that employed me and really put me on the map as a person able to make a living as an actor was
Call
television.
Yourself an actor.
Yes, but television commercials.
Oh.
I did so many television commercials.
I assume national ones versus local.
National. All
those,
national.
You made bank for those back then, not
completely
so much anymore.
Completely, no. So much money. And that allowed me to pay for drama school, which I went to later at the London Academy of Music and Dramatic Art. But when I got my SAG card, then my agents were sending me out on episodic, and I was just booking a lot of TV shows. So yes, someone posted something of me on MASH. I did two episodes on MASH with a reoccurring character, and everything from Three's Company, Happy Days, Who's the Boss,
Not for nothing, 227. I lived with Donnie Most.
Oh,
does that count?
Yes. Oh, those
it
were some happy days.
It really, really was. All right.
Wow.
So I know we're not going to talk about the husband or anything, but it is where you first originally met him.
Yes.
When you were on Bosom Buddies.
That's
correct?
Right. Yes.
Okay. You did happy anniversary, by the way.
Thank you.
You just celebrated 31 years.
Yes.
On the Greek Sunday.
That's right.
On the Greek Easter
Christos
Sunday.
Nasty to all the Greeks
out
there.
I mean, honestly, what a life you've had. You've got how many kids? Two kids, you and Tom. You have two stepchildren.
Correct.
Grandchildren.
Yes.
How could anyone call you grandma?
But they don't. They call me Yaya.
Yeah, yeah,
which
well,
is
that's
Greek,
Greek
for grandma.
That's Greek. I was going to say you could just use the word glamma.
I know. I love glamma.
Goldie
love
Hawn
that.
Uses that,
I, love
I
that.
Think, right?
I think it's very cute.
It is
I
cute.
Do like that.
All right, so I'm only going to ask this one question only because it's leading into your album, which I've listened to quite a few of the songs, Halfway to Home. You have a beautiful voice, Rita. Beautiful. Did you always know that? Was singing always part of your world as a child?
I always wanted to sing, and I remember, you know, early memories when I would sing at the drop of a hat, and the things that I loved to sing were songs like Bobby Gentry's Ode to Billy Joe, because it was such a scary song to me. It was so mysterious, like what
sad.
Was happening and sad, what was happening on that bridge, and why isn't this family talking to each other, and why are they ignoring this girl that clearly knows something? So I was very intrigued by the stories and song, but you know, listening to AM radio, we were exposed to so many
KHJ,
genres.
Right?
KHJ,
which is K-Earth now.
Exactly.
Yes,
I know.
Yes, yes,
we had,
yes.
Oh my God, remember
oh
Sam
God,
Riddle
so
and all those people
Charlie
too.
Tuna.
Charlie Tuna.
Yep.
Please, the Teenage Fair.
Did you sing for like people at home? Like when I was
yes.
little, I did Sunday shows for my grandparents.
Oh, I would sing at any time at the drop of a hat. Beatles songs.
So this came natural for you.
It did, but I never did it because I didn't read music. I didn't play an instrument, and there was nothing like YouTube where you could just do covers of songs and put them up there and hopefully someone would hear you. But the closest I got was working at the Universal Amphitheater as a ticket taker.
Oh.
And I would go and I would watch all of these people who came through, like Carole King, Joni Mitchell, the Eagles,
and would you
James
say to
Taylor.
Yourself, one day I'm going to be up there?
No, I actually
no?
said, how do you do it? How do you get up there? How do these people...
Were you shy as a kid?
Not shy. Just, I didn't know how to make it happen. I didn't know anybody in the music business. I didn't know anybody who played music or was in a band. I had no clue on how to get it. And then acting sort of took over.
It took over for you. On this new album, you co-wrote a song, but you wrote a lot of them on your own as well, yes?
Everything is co-written.
Oh, everything is co-written. Yeah. Okay. So you co-wrote this song called The Spark.
Right.
Which I didn't know. Listening to it, I kind of assumed, but it was kind of like an ode to people who ask you a million times that you're so sick of. The secret sauce to a longevity marriage, which, knock on wood, you have. I'm going to say this. I sat next to you and your husband at a restaurant. I accosted you guys. And I know the secret to your marriage. You like each other. I saw you talk. I saw you laugh. I saw the likability come out. And to me, that's the secret sauce. But you co-write, this song, The Spark. Can you tell us a little bit about that song and how, what motivated you to really come up with those lyrics?
I think that in all relationships, and particularly long-term relationships, you hopefully met somebody and you had this beautiful spark, this beautiful glimmer that can ignite into some beautiful love. And that is something that you can never let die. You always have to keep fanning those flames, as it were, to keep that alive. And I think that to me is really like saying, don't take anything for granted. You just have to, every day, you have to be thankful, you have to be blessed, you can't take anything for granted, and
it's
you
like paper,
work on it.
It's like paper fire versus wood fire. Paper fire burns out very fast, but a wood fire takes a long time
to
burn.
That.
And that's what I felt when I listened to your song. By the way, you're listening to it now. It's the music you're hearing and the lyrics you're hearing underneath us speaking. It's clear you support each other's careers and lives. But to me, the love of any kind, of two humans together, it really has to be wood burning. Because wood, as you know, can burn a long time.
Right.
Paper will burn in 2 seconds.
I know. One of my co-writers on that song, John Shanks, is also in a very, very long-term marriage. And he's a Grammy-winning producer and writer and wrote for Sheryl Crow and Melissa Etheridge. And he's on tour with Bon Jovi because he's a badass guitarist. And my other co-writer, Annie Bosco, has never been married. And so I thought it was really great to have that combination of people that are looking and that also have gone through it on the other side, you know?
Yes, and especially in Hollywood. 31 years. Oh my God, that's a lifetime in Hollywood. All right, so look, your career is steady as an actress throughout the years. You're acting and now producing, singing. How do you manage it all?
Well, fortunately, not everything is happening at the exact same time. And things that, like movies, when a lot of time you're working on developing them and making sure that they make it to the big screen. And when they shoot, you're on location. And that's a limited period of time. You don't have to, you know, it's not like you're on there for a year and a half.
So everything is planned strategically month by month. So you could fit
it
in the 12 months.
Yeah. And we try to, you know, make sure that our schedules are coinciding and not keeping us too separated for too long of a period of time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Okay, I see.
But listen, I think creative people do a lot of creative things. You're not really just, I love what I do. And so I think that's a huge part of it. And I always think of this quote that I read with Oprah once, and she said, most people don't know what it is that they want. And if they know what it is that they want, they can take steps to make it happen. So I think knowing what it is that you want
100%.
Is really important.
Well, knowledge is power.
And yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's how I feel.
Yeah.
Okay. Not only does she sing, act, produce, Anthony, she's done Broadway twice. Chicago was your debut. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
And then you actually did this, which I saw, Larry David's Fish in the Dark. That was the most daunting. I don't even know how you did that. I just don't even know how you did that.
Because I love that man so much.
I do too, but he's nuts.
He's good nuts because it's combined with kindness, you know? He's so kind and so sweet.
But
and
that is something to work with him because every second his brain, did he change lines in the middle of
every day?
I knew it.
Every day he would come up to my dressing room and he'd say, because I would start the play on the stage by myself, and yes. then Larry would make an entrance.
This is a story loosely based upon his life, correct?
No. Just it was based on a friend's sort of experience, but not really his.
I think he's not telling the truth, but go ahead.
So he would come on stage, and every day he would come up to me and change that first line. Listen, I didn't like the laugh that it got last night. So try this. Okay, let's run it. And then we would run the line and we'd get down on stage.
Larry David!
So funny. I just completely
adored him. I mean, that's a difficult situation, but people who do soap operas, they get those lines changed on set like that as well. But that's daunting.
No, but he also, like at the end of the play, after we'd been doing it for, I don't know, 7 or 8 months or something like that, it was like our last week, because Larry and I left and then Jason Alexander took over with Glenn Headley, who passed away.
Yeah,
God bless her. But he was standing backstage and was like, I don't know. I kind of like this. What is this feeling? I said, you're having a good time, Larry.
No, he doesn't know a good time.
And he's like, and I said to him, a week from now, you're going to look at your watch and you're going to say 7:30. I would be just going on stage. I'd be, we'd be high-fiving each other before the lights went down. And he goes, I can assure you, when I leave this play, I will never think of it again.
And you know what? I believe him. I know he didn't want to do it to begin with. He struggled with doing it to begin with. I mean, he's a funny guy. I adore that man. I run into him a lot where we live.
Yes.
He lives close to us.
Yes.
And I see him at the same restaurant
yes.
I accosted you. So I'll have to accost him next time. All right. Are you listening, Anthony? Because there's a lot to take in about Rita.
A lot.
She's been a contributing editor to Harper's Bazaar magazine, writing over 24 articles. And you were also an editor-at-large for the Huffington Post. And you wrote for Oprah Magazine. What the hell?
Look, like I said, if you love what you do, and you...
But Rita, there's only 24 hours in a day.
Yes, but you're looking at a cumulative thing. You're not looking at like, this is what I'm doing every single day. I'm not producing a movie, writing an article, writing songs, acting. It's not all happening in one day. Yes.
Did you enjoy that?
I loved all of that stuff. I have to really thank Nora Ephron, my dear friend, the writer and director, because she was the one who really encouraged me to write. And I think that combined with the writing I had done for Huffington Post or Harper's Bazaar or Oprah Magazine was really sparked by Nora's ability to understand that if you have a voice and you have something you want to say, that you should figure out a way to say it. And
well, she was a real champion for women as
well.
She really was.
She really was.
God
bless
her.
She really was.
Speaking of which, you've said, I saw in an interview, that good roles for women in Hollywood over 30, slim and none, huh?
Yeah, very rare. Although, I keep looking for those roles, and I'm very thankful when I see them. But in
why
movies
not for
that
men?
We've...
Why for us only?
What do you mean?
It's roles are a plethora
because
for
the business
men
is
over 30.
The business is still run by men, and most of the positions of power that get to decide which movies get made are with men in those positions. So we need to support women behind the camera.
Well, you
and
were
in
one
studio
of those.
Positions, and the movies that I make have female protagonists and females that are over the age of 25.
Let's
talk Meryl
about
Streep,
that.
Cher. Julie Walters, Christine Baranski.
Well, let's get into it. Let's start about with My Big Fat Greek Wedding. So Rita is the one that brought that to the screen, okay? She went to see the play, correct?
Right here
in
L.A.
Right? Fell in love here with the play. And
based
then,
on the title that I saw on a one-inch square ad in the L.A. Times that said, My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Well,
and I was
Greek
like,
obvious,
okay,
right?
I thought that is a very funny title. And I went just based on the title. I knew nothing about it.
Okay. And then this movie, tell people, almost never got made.
Correct.
Tell us.
The movie almost never got made, even though I had produced two stage productions of it with Nia. And the script was Nia Vardalos, who wrote it and starred in it. And she handed me the script basically that night of seeing the play, because I said to her, this would make a great movie. She goes, I have a script. And And the script was pretty much the script we shot. It was that together. And studios did not want to make it with a woman that they didn't know, even though she wrote it. And I thought to myself, but if this were Jerry Seinfeld or Ray Romano, you'd probably be letting them make this movie. So we finally ended up getting independent financing with HBO and Gold Circle, and we made the movie we wanted to make. So the movie comes out. The movie is made, and then we can't get a distributor. The distributors all were like, I don't get it. It's not edgy enough. They didn't really understand that it was so funny, and that when we would go do the focus groups, and you know, that's when you show it to people and they give their opinions, everybody said, I'm Chinese, but this is my family. I'm Italian, but this is my family. I'm Black, but this is my family. It's all, we were feeling that the audiences would like it. So very slow build, but it was really a word of mouth movie.
But when it came out, you knocked it out of the park, so much so that weren't you going to do a sequel, or you did a sequel, right?
We did do a sequel,
right.
Yes.
Did do the sequel.
Yeah,
that
My Big Fat Greek Wedding too.
It didn't have as much steam, though, as the first one.
No, but it was a very successful movie.
I love that.
It wasn't the most successful independent movie of all time, like the first one.
Because that first one was amazing.
It really was. It's still, when I watch it, I'm so proud of it. And it makes me laugh.
Rita, you don't understand. My mother walks around with Windex.
Oh, no.
Now, if you haven't seen My Big Fat Greek Wedding, you don't understand that everything the mother fixed.
The father.
Everything was with Windex.
Yes. You could have
cold,
a pimple.
Have the Windex.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is still very much.
If you had
much.
A pimple, he'd say, put some Windex on it.
It's very true. It is very, very true. All right. And then you got Mamma Mia. She mentioned a little bit of Cher. Christine Bransky. Mamma Mia, huge hit. Meryl Streep, huge hit. You don't just produce one. You produce two.
Well, I went
to see.
You
like to do the sequels.
I do. Listen, when I saw Mamma Mia, it had been out for 3 weeks in London. We were there. Tom was working, and we were there.
You saw the play? You mean?
The play musical.
Correct.
It came out, and I said, let's go see this ABBA music. How fun. This will be great. We take the family, and we go. And when it first came out, I was like, oh boy, this is what, first 10 minutes, I'm like, I don't know. This is kind of, where is this going? And then in 20 minutes, I looked over at Tom. I'm like, this is the best thing I've ever seen. We have to make this into a movie. And plus, it shot in, it took place in Greece.
Of course.
I'm half Greek, and I'm very proud of my cultural heritages, both of them. And it just was pure joy. And it took us about 5 years because it was to get the rights, because it hadn't even traveled to tour in America or Canada or anything. So it took us quite a long time.
Do you have to get the rights from ABBA? Who do you get the rights from?
You have to get the rights from the producer who produced the stage play.
Wow, that's amazing.
Right.
All right, and then you slow it down a little because it's good news, folks, though. Bad news for a minute, but all good. You got diagnosed with breast cancer.
Right.
That kind of changes up a little bit for you. You go through a double mastectomy. I have so many friends going through that right now. But if you look at Rita, the warrior, you can all come out on the other side. How does that affect you, though, during all of that?
Well, it was... It's terrifying. You get that diagnosis. I was doing Fish in the Dark at the time I got the diagnosis. And
you were very public about it, which I really think is so fantastic, Rita, because it helps so many people.
I think, you know, for me, it was important to get two messages out there. I had initially been misdiagnosed, and a girlfriend of mine said, get a second opinion on your pathology, which is the tissue that they get in a biopsy.
I hear this so often.
And so I sent the pathology in for a second opinion, and it came back that I did have cancer. And then I got a third opinion, and that was also confirmed. So my only treatment option was a bilateral mastectomy with reconstruction. And I went back to the play 4 weeks later, which was extraordinary. I took off for a month for my surgery
and
recuperation.
But I bet that helped you heal in every way.
It did, knowing that I could go back and do a job and sort of be normal again. But a few months later, it kind of hits you, like, what just happened? And I had an enormous amount of anxiety, and I found that meditation and particularly mindfulness meditation was really good, and also cognitive behavioral therapy, because it was like I couldn't stop my mind from thinking about what just happened.
Yeah.
What if?
Oh my God. Because again, you're in the not knowing territory.
Exactly.
And so without that knowledge of power, you're
screwed.
Your mind will screw you. I get it. I'm going through that with a friend of mine now. Maybe you know Jillian Barbary.
How is she doing?
You know, she's having a tough time. Did you undergo chemo?
I did not.
Okay, so she's undergoing horrific chemo.
Right.
And just what you described is what she's going through. She's almost there. Four more
chemos. Oh, yeah, light at the end of the tunnel.
But then radiation. She's going to go through that.
But she will get through it. When you're going through
it, Jill?
It's really, really tough, but you do get through it and you come out on the other side of
it. Yeah, you do. It's not a death sentence anymore, people.
No, it's not.
Nothing is really a death sentence until you're dead. That's the way I look at things.
That is true.
And speaking of being dead, you didn't have to be dead to get on a postage stamp. I'm just saying, most people have to be dead to get on a postage stamp. And in 2016, is this not true? Were you honored with your own stamp from the Greek Postal Service?
Correct, I was.
Do you send mail with your face?
Absolutely. I got sheets of stamps.
Letter,
well, I can't. You have to be in Europe for me to send you a letter, because
well,
it's Euros.
I'm going to Israel in July. Could you send it to me there?
Yes, they honor people that are Greek Americans who bring kind of honor and awareness to what a great country Greece is.
I mean, she's got her own stamp.
Well, we shot a couple of movies there, and we promote Greece. We love it. It's an absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous country with extraordinarily kind people. You would love
it. I'm going to go.
You know, Greece still houses so many migrants that came over and has them and has taken them in when they couldn't cross borders into other countries. And I think that's pretty amazing.
I do too. I mean, I love
especially when they were going through such difficult economic times themselves.
All right. So you get better. Everything's great in your life. You do that with a lot of prayers because, like me, you believe in the power of prayer.
I do.
Which I think is so important for people to understand. There's a higher power.
Yes.
Pray to it.
Yes.
I don't care what you call it. Pray to it.
Right.
But then you say your journey got influenced from your friend who people will know. I'll remind everybody. Cara DioGuardi, who was a judge for a minute on American Idol,
mm-hmm.
and you two are very close, and she said, hey, you better go for it now or never, and start writing, and she helped you into that, right?
She was the one. She just asked me one day, what is it that, you know, you want to be doing or whatever, and I said, oh, God, I'd give anything to be able to write a song like you, and she said, what makes you think you can't? And I said, because I don't play an instrument, I don't read music. She said, do you have something you want to say? And I was like, my head just kind of went like fireworks off. I was like, yes. And she said, I'll write your first songs with you. And she did. And that opened the door to songwriting.
Album?
On my first album, we wrote Grateful together and another song called You Know Who You Are, that hasn't made it onto an album yet, but it doesn't mean that it won't. And she
wrote the music and the lyrics.
We wrote
with
together
you?
With another writer, Jason Reeves. And when you're in the room writing, everybody's contributing.
How does that work? What, does people just throw out a line?
Different. Like, Kara came in with a little hook melody. Jason is an incredible songwriter. I had the story for Grateful.
Do they do it with an instrument? The
guitar, and this one it was guitar.
Okay.
No, Kara just sang that to me.
Oh, so it's just
she sang it to me. She said, "I came up with this in the car driving over," and she
this is a songwriter for you.
Yeah, exactly. She had this da 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 da, you know, that kind of a thing, and I was like, "Wow, that's pretty amazing." So we wrote that, and then 2 days later, we wrote "You Know Who You Are," and she really opened it up. And then Christian Bush, who I had opened with my first album for Sugarland, and he was the founder of the band Sugarland, and he said to me, if you ever want to write music, call me up. And so when I started writing with Kara, I called him up and I said, were you serious about that? And he said, absolutely. So then we started writing together. And
is that the album that you did a duet with Chris Cornell?
That was an album of covers. Was called AM/FM. That was all cover songs I didn't write.
Boy, you sang with some amazing people.
Amazing
though.
People.
I am not going
to lie.
God
bless
here.
Chris Cornell. What an amazing voice.
Wow, what a loss,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, what a loss.
You describe your music, I think, as Southern California rock, classic Nashville country, which was a hallmark for you growing up. Is that the kind of music that your parents played in the house?
Yeah. Listen, you know, as I was saying earlier, AM radio for me exposed me to so many genres because AM radio played everything growing up here in LA.
Yeah.
Beatles, Beach Boys, Stones, Dolly Parton, Willie Nelson, Johnny Cash, Supremes, Diana Ross, Temptations, Four Seasons, Bill Withers. We had everything.
All on one station. And the reason for that, in case anyone's interested, is because there was only one station.
Right.
Now they split it up. We have The Wave. That will play the jazz and the R&B. Then K-Earth, we play the classic hits.
Right.
Kiss FM plays the top 40. But back when we were growing up, that's not how it was.
That's right. Everything was there. So
right.
We would listen to the radio. It would be on whether you were driving in the car without seatbelts, because who had seatbelts back then?
Nobody.
Or you were home and the radio was on while you were doing your Saturday chores or whatever. But that was what exposed me to, I think, songwriting in terms of the story. And my mom was very funny. She was Greek. She had an accent, but we would be in the car driving and she would say to me, "This song going to be a hit." And she was always right. And she would,
I'm laughing because my friend Debbie Matenopoulos, who's Greek, imitates her mother.
Oh,
right? And
no,
it sounds just like
it's
that.
It's the best.
Have you heard her do it?
No, but I mean, anybody who has a Greek parent has that.
You have got to hear her. It's the funniest thing you've ever heard.
Yeah, she's great.
That's hilarious.
But yeah, she would say, "That song going to be a hit." And then she would have a song like Bread's song, you know. what's that word? You know, the one about the, not diary, but the one about the, "I could see you once again."
Oh, yeah.
If. Okay.
It's called If.
So she would say, "What do you think this song is about?" And she would force me to sort of look at lyrics.
How old was this that she would do this?
Maybe 8 or 10 or something like that.
Really? She was
doing
that?
Yes. And she would draw attention to the stories of the songs. And that is what's always been so compelling to me.
Was she around to see your first album, I hope?
Yes, she was.
Goodness.
She came to see me at the Troubadour, which was fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
really
fantastic.
Great.
Fantastic. All right, now you have a writer's camp, right? Did Kara talk you into doing that? Tell us a little bit about that.
Kara said to me, "We should do a writing camp and you'll come up with a bunch of songs for your next album."
Which is the fourth album, Halfway to Home.
Yeah.
What does that title mean?
Well, for me, it's kind of like we're always a work in progress. You're never quite where you think you should be or want to be, whether it's personally or professionally or emotionally. And I always felt like you could be going along and thinking, "This is great. Everything's going great. This is fantastic." And then something comes along and sideswipes you, screech. And it can be something like cancer. It can be anything. And I just felt like all you can do is really just be in it and keep moving forward. Keep moving forward and knowing that you're on your way to something great. But like you said, you're not dead till you're dead.
You're
so you just keep going.
You're
so you're halfway.
As long as I'm above ground.
Right, right.
I'm good. All right. And then tell us what inspired Throw Me a Party, another song that I really liked.
Thank you. Throw Me a Party was because when I had been diagnosed with cancer and it was very scary, and before you know that you're going to have a good prognosis and you're sitting here talking to you, Lisa Stanley, and you don't have that in your realm of your frame of reference yet, I said to my husband, like, "Look, if something happens and I go before you, just I want you to be real sad, okay?" Like, I want you to miss me, but please,
I love you for that.
A badass party. I want a party. I want my life to be celebrated and filled with joy and music and dancing. And it's so funny because...
Isn't that weird, though, to say out loud?
It is weird to say out loud, but, you know, I did a music video for it and posted it. And do you know how many people have thought about this? It's not unusual. I thought it was going to be something that was like, to me, it felt
morbid.
Like I was a morbid secret that I was letting out. But the truth is, people do think about this.
Did you see Barbara Cochran from Shark Tank?
Yeah, no. Okay. What about her?
She
love
threw
her.
Herself her, I think it was her 70th birthday.
God bless her.
But wait, she threw a funeral, not a birthday. You walk down a red carpet, she's in a coffin. She lied in the coffin and produced her own funeral as her party. Throw me a party.
What? I want to see video of that.
Oh, no, there is. There's video. There's pictures.
What, did
everywhere.
She make people speak about her and stuff?
Yes.
That's actually kind of cool.
I thought the same thing. I thought, you know, not to be narcissistic.
I'd have a gospel choir.
I'd like to see who would show up at my funeral. Not to be narcissistic
that is so funny.
I mean, I thought that was really funny. And I thought of your song in the respect that she threw herself a party, all right.
That is crazy.
I got to show you the pictures.
Oh, yeah.
They're crazy. So you say you wrote these songs to remind yourself that life is and always is a work in progress.
Yeah, exactly.
Till the day we die.
Exactly.
Otherwise, there's something wrong with you because you can't be perfect.
You cannot be perfect. And you have to be. I mean, I think every day I wake up, I always start with a prayer of gratitude and just it's an acknowledgement of that I even woke up. Like, oh my God, I woke up and I live in America and it's a beautiful day.
And you're so blessed in every way.
Yes.
You have a healthy life, a healthy family.
That's
you
right.
I'm knocking on wood in case, or whatever this crap is for Micah.
There's wood in there somewhere.
Whatever. It's the truth, though. That gratitude, I think, is what drives you to a good place in
absolutely.
Life. I just think.
Do
you have a favorite song on your album?
On my album.
I hate to ask, but just...
I think I'm partial to Throw Me a Party because it's so extremely personal. And I wrote that with Christian Bush, who I'm going to be touring with this summer.
Ooh, where will we be touring?
All over the South and the East Coast, primarily.
And for those of you who are on the West Coast, just a little while ago, you were able, if you were smart enough, to get down to Stagecoach, where you just performed. That's your first time doing that, right?
First time at Stagecoach.
Okay,
it was fantastic.
The pictures.
A blast.
That outfit you had on was that and a bag of chips.
Thank you. Designed by Tom Ford. Tom Ford designed that outfit. He's a very dear friend.
I mean, just for you to wear at Stagecoach?
Yes.
Get out.
It's.
Do you get to keep it?
Yes, I get to keep it.
I mean, I don't know where you'd ever wear it again.
I'm wearing it to all my shows. Are you kidding me?
Okay, on stage.
Oh, I'm wearing it all. Yeah, I'll be in. People will be so tired of that outfit, but
Was it daunting? Was it scary?
It's very humbling to be on a place like Stagecoach where
it was
so much great
degrees
music.
And you were all covered up.
Yeah, it was really warm.
Were you sweaty and hot?
No, I wasn't because our tent was shaded.
Oh,
the Palomino stage was shaded, fortunately. But no, the audience was incredible. They were fantastic and knew the songs and sang along. And
well, these are your fans.
It was
really
cool.
They better know the damn songs. You feel like a little rock star, huh?
Fantastic. Yeah.
Is that the first time you really felt that vibe, that kind of a rock star vibe?
Yes.
I know you've been on stage many times.
Yes.
But this seems to me, these Coachellas and these stage coaches, this is the big league now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
It felt very much like it's super exciting. I can't even explain it to you. It's super exciting.
Do you get nervous before you do something like that?
Yeah. If you're not nervous, you're brain dead. I don't know. Yes, definitely.
Do you get like butterfly nervous or sweaty palm nervous?
No, not sweaty palm nervous. Like performance excitement nerves. Like you're really excited to get out there. And, you know, we were very, very well rehearsed and very well prepared.
How long do you rehearse for these kind of shows?
Well, I did some warm-up shows. I rehearsed... like a few days just with my band and musicians, and then we went to another big stage and rehearsed there because we were all on in-ear monitors and all of that, so we had a few days there, and then we did some warm-up shows because
you're prepared.
You have to be prepared,
right?
You're you know, people are coming to see you and they might be skeptical, so you have to give them a really good show.
What's the best live show you've seen?
Oh, wow.
Because I imagine you've gone to
There's a few. Bruno Mars is one of the most amazing.
Tiny but Mighty, my favorite man in the world.
Oh my gosh, one of the most incredible live performers I've ever seen.
I'll tell you what's so great about Bruno Mars. He appeals to every age range. My dad, who is 85, loves him.
Yeah.
No, I mean.
So do, and we took the all the kids and everything when we went. So there was a definite demographic range there. I love.
But I mean, he's for everyone,
he's
right?
Amazing. Okay, Justin Timberlake. Incredible.
It's Adele. Must be my.
Adele is unbelievable because she's so funny and people don't realize that.
You and I have the same exact music taste. And
Taylor
don't
Swift,
realize.
Have you seen her show?
Unbelievable.
Taylor Swift is extraordinary because she's got this massive stadium tour and yet it's like she's singing to you, one person. And that is a gift.
I mean, I've actually interviewed her.
Extraordinary.
And she's such a doll.
She is.
She gets such a bad rap, though.
Does she?
Yeah.
I don't think she... Why? Because she's too so talented?
I guess.
I mean, what's her problem?
Jealous. They're haters. You know, people are just haters.
She's fantastic. She's smart. She's an amazing musician. She's an incredible performer. I don't know what people...
I agree with you.
I only focus on the good.
Those are all my favorites. All of those are my absolute favorites. Bruno Mars. I'll tell you who else people don't realize is hysterically funny.
And you too. You too puts on an amazing live show.
That's Bonner, man. Celine Dion is hysterical.
Oh, she's fantastic.
Is she not the
funniest,
though?
Saw her in Vegas. Love her.
I mean, she made me pee my pants. I laughed so hard with her. She's really hysterical.
You know, I love being back at Caesar's Palace.
And your mouth does exactly like
I love it.
All right, what's the biggest venue you've played so far? Because I know you have a tour coming.
In Indiana, when I opened for Sugarland, we played a big, huge arena in Indianapolis.
And what is that like, opening for Sugarland?
It's very
ginormous.
Intense because it's like 10,000 people. And then recently I performed at Chris Cornell's tribute concert at the Forum.
You?
Yeah,
I
sang The Promise.
Amazing. That looked
It was
amazing.
It was incredible. It was a fantastic show. So that was another huge place to perform. And then Disney Concert Hall was just because it's Disney Concert
Disney
Hall.
Disney Concert Hall.
Yeah.
Hello-zy.
And Carnegie
Acoustis.
Hall. Oh. I got to do Carnegie Hall, but just a part of Sting and Trudy's Rainforest Gala. But I sang All I Have to Do is Dream with Vince Gill and danced with James Taylor Shall We Dance.
Hello-zy.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Radio City Hall. Your turn.
I did that with Paul
Simon.
Never mind,
I take it back.
With Paul Simon, he did a benefit for his children's health fund, and
so I sang there
too. Yes.
You've been there and you've done that.
But I want to go now with my own show and do those places.
Oh,
do you know
I see.
What I mean? Well,
yes.
Disney, I did my own show, but would be
I'm
really
sure
fun.
You're going to make it there. What's the biggest risk so far with all of this?
Just doing it.
Just putting yourself out
there. You know, it's scary.
Do you get yucky comments ever? You don't read that stuff, do you?
I don't read them, but I also don't get yucky comments because I think, I believe in the music. I think it's good and people can say whatever they want to say, but just go listen to the music. And if you like it, then that speaks for itself.
And how do people buy music nowadays, right? You have to go online to buy it. You can't really go to a record store anymore.
I do. My stuff is in record stores. And
where is a record store? Tell
Barnes
everyone.
And Noble as a bookstores, but they sell records.
Is that right? They still do?
Yep. And
I think Target sells music, don't they?
I'm not in Target, but I'm in Barnes and Noble's and a bunch of independent record stores, but also Amazon. I sell physical CDs still because people still like to have physical CDs.
What do you mean?
CDs.
You like stand on the corner and sell CDs?
Yes, I do. I stand there. Like tuppence for a CD.
Well, I mean, honestly,
no, meaning that I make there are physical CDs that you can buy. Of course, everything can be bought also on Amazon. You can stream it on Amazon, iTunes. You can buy it on iTunes. You can stream it on Spotify. It's everywhere. But I have vinyl for Halfway to Home.
Oh, vinyl is like happening again.
It's happening.
Happening
and
again.
And I have physical CDs for everything.
And let me ask you, would you be open to... I see how comedians, they go like Jerry Seinfeld and these big comedians, they go to like little clubs like the Laugh Factory or the Comedy and they work out, their material. Would you, like there's a place here in Los Angeles called Vibrato. Are you familiar with Vibrato?
Yeah, that's Herb Alpert's place at the top of Beverly
Eden
Glen.
Eden is my very good friend.
Yeah, it's an amazing
Eden
club.
Would you go ever and perform there to like before you hit the road to work out some stuff?
Absolutely. I would totally do that. You know, I thought that they were more of a jazz club, though.
No, I'm going to tell you what's going on because Eden and I are very good friends. Jolie Fisher just did her one woman show
Jolie.
Up there.
Oh, she's fantastic.
Oh my God, she tore the place
she's
up.
She's hilarious.
Rita. Hilarious,
yes.
Her show.
Mm-hmm.
Hilarious. Not to mention, that girl can belt out a tune, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just thinking that maybe, I don't know, work out a kink or two.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I can hook that up for
okay,
you.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
I didn't know you couldn't hook that up yourself.
I thought that it was primarily jazz. And I went to see...
it used to be.
Oh, my God, I love her. Catherine Jenkins. Yes. I saw her there, and she was incredible.
You know, Donnie Most, we brought up Happy Days earlier.
Talk about your exes. What's yes. Tom going to say?
He could care less. He could care less. Donnie is performing up there with his 16-piece... did you know Donnie sings?
No.
Oh, yeah.
16-piece band?
16-piece
What, like
orchestra.
With horn section?
Oh, yeah.
What kind of music? Is
when
he doing
the
standards?
Shark bites.
Oh, my gosh. I want to go see that.
Yeah, I'll tell you, he's coming in June 6th, I want to say. I got to call him and ask him and remind him.
Fantastic.
But I hooked him up there. He loves it.
That's
it's
amazing.
His second time going. So it's maybe a good place for you to work out a few
I'd love it.
Kinks. So we'll talk. All right, so lastly, if you didn't get into this business... taking out being a wife and a mom and all that, what would you have done? I'll tell you what I would have done.
Okay.
I say this every time so you already know. I am enthralled with profilers. I would have been an
Damn
FBI
it, girl.
Profiler.
That is exactly what I would have done.
Stop.
I promise
sorry,
you.
I
always say I would have been FBI
her.
Or CSI.
Oh
I want to get down to the bottom
oh
of it.
Oh my God, I want to know what's in the brain.
I want to solve crimes. I want to know what is going on with these people. I want justice to be served.
I mean, can you believe this?
Yes.
I've never heard anyone else say that.
Neither have I. It's
I am
either
the only
that
one.
Or being an athlete.
And did you watch, that is going to happen for me. Did you watch the, on Netflix, it's called Abducted in Plain Sight.
Yes, I did.
Okay, I interviewed Jan.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Dude.
That is the most extraordinary
Twice
story.
Twice by the same man.
I could not, well, I have so many things to say about that because those parents
horrifying.
Were,
horrible humans.
But that
but
guy
she
was
loves
such
those parents.
I know. And they were so brave to be interviewed, but that perpetrator, but he was a master manipulator.
Well, they come at you and they first groom the parents.
Yes.
So in a part of a way, I felt bad for the parents.
Wow.
But I'll tell you what Jan said that was interesting, that this even made me more want to dig. She's completely fine, Rita, or at least pretends to be, and never went to therapy.
I'm so curious about that. That's extraordinary. She should be studied.
Anthony, you were right.
Because that is major
Anthony was
trauma.
Right there.
Yeah.
What? How was it?
She was normal. Yeah.
Doesn't she sound completely and acknowledges everything?
She sound like she wasn't affected by it.
Wow. I'm not kidding you. And that made me even more so. I'm like, maybe when I'm done with this radio stuff, I'm going to take classes and learn how to profile.
Why not take them now? Why do you have to be done with the radio stuff?
You're right.
Just take it as an extra
you're right.
activity.
I should do that. You're
absolutely
right.
Absolutely. Do it.
That floored me when that woman said she had not gone through therapy.
That is
astonishing, right?
But didn't they have a very strong faith?
Yes, they did.
And
okay. There's a lot to be said, as we both agree, with prayer and faith. But my goodness gracious, to not harbor some kind of trauma from that is, I mean, even with your faith, there's got to be some. Not for this woman, right?
No.
It's
kind of miraculous, really.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I must have asked her 10 times.
Yeah.
Sure?
Yeah,
sure?
Exactly.
Right? And she's still close with the mom.
Is she married, happily married? Does she have children?
She does have children.
Wow.
If you can believe, it's some story I am telling you.
Yeah.
This is what.
So brave.
It's so brave. But this is what makes me want to dig deeper into these people's minds.
Right.
What are they thinking?
I have a friend who is a prosecutor in New York. He's the prosecuting attorney for really horrific crimes. His name is Matthew Bogdanus, and he just tried a case of that man who killed his wife and then tried to frame his children into being the ones that killed her.
Gee, I didn't read about this. Where's this? Here?
In New York. No, he's in New York. New York City.
Did it just happen?
Yeah, he just got
Wait, I did see
25 to life. Yeah.
I just saw it in New York Post.
Horrific crime.
What is wrong with these people?
Horrible. But he is like that. He has to get into the mind of a psychopath.
The only thing I would love to ask someone, which I'm dying to interview an FBI profiler, when you go home at night, what happens? Like when you're doing a movie or you're doing a play, you go home, you're no longer that character. You're Rita Wilson, correct?
Right.
You can have conversation with your husband, your children. But I don't know. Can these FBI profilers do that?
I think it can be very challenging.
Right?
I think some cases more than others.
I don't know. If I had a superhuman power, it would be to get into someone's mind and be like a little bug in their brain to just like know, you know, what's going on.
Wow.
I mean, it's
I would take those classes, Lisa, because it sounds like you'd be really good at it.
Oh, no. You don't even know. It's a sickness. It's a sickness.
Do you watch all the Dateline NBCs?
You don't even know. Josh Mankiewicz is one of my besties.
I love him so much.
You don't know. I call him every day, drive him crazy.
Oh, my God. It's like, tell me more about this crap.
Yeah. I go, I want to see your notes. We had him in. He was here on the podcast.
So good.
What, didn't he tell some creepy stories?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean,
yes.
Honestly, I really, you're right. You know what, Rita, you just might have been my Cara DioGuardi. You might have just
Let me be.
To do
this. You don't
this.
Have to wait. Do it now.
And
you love
really
it.
What I want to do is a documentary on the insides of the brains of what goes on with these people.
Oh, do it. What are you waiting for?
Do it. You know, like you.
You're halfway to home, girl.
I'm halfway to home.
Get it going.
Yeah, halfway to home. Exactly. All right. Speaking of which, we're halfway to done. No, we are done. This has been, I love you, Rita.
Lisa, thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure.
I hope that you don't mind I accosted you in the restaurant.
Are you kidding me? I love it. I mean, I wish, honestly, this is, what did you do? You were so friendly. You were so wonderfully warm. You were very respectful. And then you said, if you want to come and do this, I'd love to have you. And I was like, are you kidding me? In 2 seconds.
It was really nice. And not for nothing, but next to me on the other side was Harrison Ford and Calista Flockhart.
That's right.
I didn't ask them.
No.
I left that restaurant and I said, people in Indiana would be going insane. I'm sandwiched in between Tom Hanks, Rita Wilson, Calista Flockhart, and Harrison Ford. No one's going to believe this.
The other night
ever.
I was there and Christian Bale was there.
You know, I'm going tonight. I wonder who will be
we
there.
We shall
tonight.
Never say what this restaurant is.
Never. Oh, I never say. No, we never give away our places. As a matter of fact,
family haunts.
This place, were you living in this area a long time?
Yes.
So do you remember what that place used to be?
Yes, I do.
It was
and I went there.
Every Saturday.
Yes.
That
yes.
was our hang.
Yeah.
And I mean, a group of us. It was
exactly.
Josh Duhamel,
yes.
Fergie, did you
yes.
ever see Oliver Hudson?
Yes.
I mean, we would go there on Saturdays and live it up because no
yeah.
paparazzi.
Nope.
Nobody bothering anybody.
No.
All the kids could run around.
Exactly.
And boy, is it different what they turned it into.
It
yeah?
is. And it's just wonderful.
It really
yeah.
is. All right, so Rita, give out your socials, if you will, for people so they could find your music and find you and learn everything.
You can find me.
So they can
me.
Know where your tour dates and everything
great.
Are.
You can find me at, it's always at Rita Wilson on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. And my website is ritawilson.com. And you can check that for tour dates and anything that's
up and
running.
Can they buy your album off of your website?
No, you can buy my album on iTunes, Amazon, in stores, and you can stream it on Apple Music, Spotify, and Amazon.
There you go. And listen, you guys, this is album number 4. So if you like it, go back and get the other 3. Because I have to say, I've listened to a little bit of each one now. And Rita, you got it. What can I say?
Thank you.
You got
Lisa.
That thing.
Thank you. That's so nice.
All right. You guys know you can find me, Lisa Stanley 30 on the gram and Lisa K. Earth on Twitter. See ya.